com.
I'm Christopher Layden. This is The Connection. We're tuning ears and hearts on this Valentine's Day to the three-way musical romance at the heart of the Romantic century. When the composer Robert Schumann first saw Johannes Brahms, all tumbling curls and slim torso, and heard him play the piano, he said, "I heard a voice within me saying, 'He it is whom you are seeking.'" But Robert's wife, Clara Wieck Schumann, was equally struck that she had found in Brahms the noble heart, the elastic spirit that would be her friends for life. These were musical geniuses who didn't moon all day about their overwhelming emotions. Rather, they conspired to make music. Listening to Clara Schumann's Piano Concerto, the third movement, which her husband Robert Schumann orchestrated. The Piano Concerto is the first of many shared inspirations among Robert and Clara and Johannes, many borrowings, many imitations. Connection listeners, can we learn to hear the hearts beating in this music? Above all, our guest Veronica Yoakum is a piano performer of all the Schumann and Brahms works. Jan Swafford is a composer himself and Brahms, and he's also Brahms' biographer. Nancy Reich, who joins us by phone from New York, is the biographer of Clara Schumann. Give them all a call at 1-800-423-8255, or you can join us online at theconnection.org. Veronica Yoakum, get us started on this music and on these themes and on the bond among these people. It was all music, it was all love, and a lot more.
Yes, indeed it was. And I think it's amazing that Clara, the 15-year-old girl, inspired by her own wonderful piano playing and by the great friendship of the 9-year-older Robert Schumann, who was at that time also designing his own piano concerto, also in A minor, wrote this absolutely magnificent thing, of which you just heard the third movement, a la Polacca, which was very much in the course of time, and wonderful piano playing, writing, but she could not yet use the orchestration, so her dear Herr Schumann had to do that for her. She finished the concerto a little bit later when she could do the orchestration for the first movement herself. And as a matter of fact, it had its world premiere in Leipzig under the baton of another wonderful friend, Felix Mendelssohn, in 1835. So Clara wrote wonderful pieces, most of them when she was 15, 16, 17 years old, because then she married this wonderful composer and had 8 children in 12 years and subdued her own talent a little bit to him. So I don't know how much farther I should go on. I think Chris is already looking
well,
at me.
No, you can talk all day. It reminds me of something in Jan Swafford's book about Brahms, that when Clara Schumann first heard Brahms at 20 playing the piano, she heard a genius right off, but she also said, wait till he gets to orchestrating this stuff. I mean, a sort of another dimension.
That was between Robert and Clara. Robert, they both knew that his piano music of the young Brahms was very big and orchestral. It was straining for the orchestra, and so Robert called it veiled symphonies. But the thing about Clara was that she was associated with two of the greatest composers who ever lived, Robert and Brahms, and she was supremely able to understand them and to encourage them and to needle them at times.
Nancy Reich, I wish you'd introduce your Clara. She
yes.
was the child of a very musical family and a kind of a genius father.
Well, I would call her a child prodigy. She really was a genius. Consider that she began this concerto, which you heard the third movement, when she was only 13. And at 13, she thought her older friend, Robert, was 9.5 years older, had studied orchestration and could orchestrate the third movement. But she went ahead and orchestrated the first and second movements herself and made some changes in his as well. It's really her concerto, and the concerto of a very young girl. She wrote this between the ages of 13 and 15. She was also, I should say, the child of a very talented music teacher. I wouldn't call him a genius. I think he was a very especially gifted piano teacher. And her mother was also an excellent pianist. Her mother was a performer, played at the Gewandhaus. And her mother is often forgotten in this family's story, but it was her mother from whom she inherited much of her talent and who became her friend in the eventual conflict between Clara and her father, because when she announced that she wanted to marry Robert Schumann, the father was totally enraged, and a conflict that lasted some 4 years ensued. Mm. But she had her mother's support throughout these years, and that was very important to her.
These are big extended families. Forgive me, but I always get the Schumanns confused in a certain way with Robert Browning and Elizabeth Barrett Browning and the Barretts of Wimpole Street, these big mid-19th century families. Everybody was happy. Everybody was gifted. Everybody was comfortable. Everybody left prodigious marks on the world. And they seemed, of course, the Schumanns is a different case, to get married young and live happily ever after.
Oh, I wouldn't say that they were, everybody was happy.
Of course not either. And the Schumanns especially. I mean, there's trouble afoot in the Schumann marriage.
Yes. Well, to begin with, there was four very difficult years for the two of them. And the father instituted there was a lawsuit, and there were legal proceedings back and forth, and Robert, and after the marriage, though it was a happy marriage at first, there were many problems, including Robert's illness and eventual hospitalization, and death at a very young age, and a woman who was left with 8 children, at that point she had 7, one had died, and a family she had to support, and a life that was full of both triumph and tragedy. So I would not speak of this as a happy family and a happy situation. We often forget the tragic side of it, and Robert Schumann's own troubles.
Well, we'll get to that. We'll get to Brahms' role in sort of seeing Clara through the worst of it. But I also wanted to play Veronica Joachim's impromptu by Robert Schumann on a theme by Clara, and just come back to the point that these were, every day of their lives, musical co-conspirators. Let's listen to the impromptu, and then, Veronica, you can tell us what's going on. Here's the theme. Here come the variations. Veronica?
Well, of course, this belongs into the happy time of Clara and Robert, when she was a child and he was a young composer. And what I think is so wonderful about this relationship is that you can read the whole biography in the music. And I think that's one of the most important, wonderful things in the life of creative people, that no matter what happened in the later bitterness and in the problems, that still the music reflects the original wonderful feeling and the influence these talented people had on each other. Clara wrote this little romance varié, and she was 10, and it was, as a matter of fact, the first piece which her father had published, much against her will. She thought she wasn't ready. So she sent it with a dedication to Herr Robert, and Herr Robert answered and thanked with the Impromptus Opus 5 sur un thème de Clara Wieck, on a theme by Clara, because he had already, I guess, not only great admiration for this young, wonderful pianist, but he saw the talent which she also had as a composer. So he reacted in his own 20-year-old Sturm und Drang way to this wonderful, simple theme of hers.
This is 19th century classical jazz, the whole notion of sort of a theme and then endless variations on it. Jan, what do you hear?
And a communication, too. These are people who communicated in music, and music was their language of love and relationship and everything else. And I think we ought to introduce, by the way, the whole idea of the muse. Clara was first Robert's muse. She was not his first muse, in fact. He'd had some girlfriends before who produced some music. But that is a very important relationship among artists, and there's no question that Clara was one of the prime muses of the 19th century, first for her husband and then for Brahms.
Draw that out. I mean, we'll get to the complexities of Brahms's relationship with Clara, but what was different about a muse compared to a girlfriend, a wife, a lover?
First of all, she played your stuff. And she promoted it. And she stuck her neck out and forced people to sit down and play it for them and played it in her concerts. And she was one of the leading pianists of the day, one of the leading pianists of the 19th century. But she also, you know, Clara was a very somber and sober and melancholy person on the whole, but she had a wonderful smile, apparently. And people would do a lot to earn her smile. And the sheer romantic love between her and Robert was just enormous. We have records of that in their diary. It was a very romantic thing, and it was all involved in music and Robert's composing. By the way, I don't think Clara suppressed her creativity that much. She could have written a great deal more than she did. I think hanging out with somebody with Schumann and Brahms, for Clara, the way she was, it was first rate or death. That's the way she was. She knew she was a first rate pianist. I don't think she was ever quite as comfortable as a composer. So to me, she simply went for her strength in the long run. She could have written all her life. In fact, she quit writing after Robert cracked up.
Well, I think I'm not quite of your opinion, Jan. I think she was perhaps not the genius which Robert and Brahms was, but she was an extremely good composer. I remember when
I
played the concerto the first time, it was conducted by none other than Gunther Schuller. And he kept raving. He said, where did she get these harmonies from? This 14-year-old girl. Nobody writes chromaticism like this. It's a very early romantic language. And I think, of course, she could have written much more. But yes, of course, she was intimidated by the manic outpour of his work, but also she bore these children. She at one point couldn't even practice piano when he was composing, because the house was just not, they didn't have a house like this. So you practice, you write compositions, everything turned around him.
Let's take a short break. We're talking on Valentine's Day about the many-layered love affairs of Robert Schumann, his wife Clara, and the young Johannes Brahms. We'll be back. This is The Connection from NPR.
From Boston University, this is WBUR, Boston's NPR news station. Coming up on Here and Now at noon, in the wake of California's rolling blackouts and general energy problems.
This is Johannes Brahms's Opus 10, the Ballades, the fourth ballade performed by our guest, Veronica Yochum. What a piece, one of my favorite pieces in all the world. But it was written when Johannes Brahms had just joined the Schumann circle, completely enchanted by it. It was as Robert Schumann was beginning to crack up. Brahms was in love with the life with the music, obviously, but also with Clara. What's going on here, Veronica Yoakum?
Well, I think this is one of the most heart-rendering pieces which you chose to play, because I think it reflects absolutely, even if you don't want to look into the psychology of relationships, but it does reflect what was going on in the life of that young 20-year-old man. Mind you, he had just met them. Robert became a mentor, a hero, and then came a few months after that terrible thing that Robert, in an attack of manic depression, jumped into the River Rhine. And so Brahms hurried to the aid of Clara, to the help of Clara, moved into her house, was teaching her children, was helping with household chores and organizing Robert's library, always hoping that Schumann would get better. And in that time, he started to write these four ballads, I would say torn to pieces, because he was full of love for Robert, full of admiration of Robert, full of compassion for him, full of hope he would get better. He also could not but fall in love with Clara, who he admired limitlessly, who played his things. And so all of this, I think, expresses itself involuntarily in those extremely touching and personal, intimate ballads.
Mm. He was Brahms. So the terrible, as Veronica said, the yearning for Robert he was in an asylum by this point, for Robert to get better, and he never emerged from that asylum. And yet he and Clara were falling in love, and I suspect that Robert still had enough of his marbles to know what was going on, because they were trading letters. And Brahms was, of course, not able to really say it, though it was obvious. So, for example, he was writing Clara a letter at one point, and he suddenly breaks out of this long letter and says, "I've written you a dreadful letter, I can see that. So I shall write you a second one from out of the 1001 nights. It describes my condition exactly." And in that character of the character from 1001 nights, he writes to her, "Would to God that I were allowed this day, instead of writing this letter to you, to repeat to you with my own lips that I am dying of love for you."
Oh, my God.
And this was when Robert was still alive, so the wrenching thing was terrible between them, and there was this, so there they were, this household with this beautiful young man living with this woman who was, whose husband was not quite alive and not quite dead.
May I
Nancy Rice, please.
This is, you're presenting a picture of this young man living in the household with Clara, but you have to remember that almost as soon as Robert went into the hospital, Clara began touring. She had to go out and support those seven children, and paid the doctor's fees and the hospital fees, which, by the way, was one of the reasons she ceased composing when Robert died. She had to support the family, and she could do it best by her concertizing. When Brahms was with the Schumann family, he didn't live in the same. They lived in the same building. He wasn't in the apartment with them. I have to remind you that Clara was away most of the time. He was there helping out, babysitting in a sense.
Nancy Rice, she wrote letters too. What was she going through in her own heart?
I think she was going through a terrible time. You can imagine, there was her husband, a man she had adored and supported in every way, and he was had attempted suicide and then was hospitalized. Actually, at his request, he realized that he had to get away. She was forbidden to see him. She was forbidden to write to him at first. She had to go out and concertize. Actually, in a way, her playing was a kind of solace. It helped her get through these terrible times. And during those months, Brahms was in the house, living in Dusseldorf, and helping with the children. She had servants who were at home while she was out on tour. So it really wasn't a question of a household, of the two of them. And also, though, the letters they exchanged on part of Johannes Brahms were certainly sounded like love letters. They were not on intimate terms, nor did she write to him with the intimate due form for some time. I just wanted to say a few words because, I'm going to have to leave the program, and I want to leave you with this idea that I think the relationship between them was expressed, as Veronica said, most beautifully through music. And the letters, though many have veiled declarations of love, like the one which was just quoted, mainly about music and the inspiration that each has given to the, had given to the other. And there's a correspondence which lasted, as you know, from 1853 till 1896.
When she died.
But there's no...
Nancy Reich, thank you.
Yes, you're very welcome.
One of the main records of this time, though, of Brahms' consciousness, was a piece he started writing, a piano quartet in C-sharp minor that, as, I mean, Schubert had basically, Schumann, before he went cracked up, had basically said to the world in a famous article, this kid is God, this is the Messiah of music. And it threw Brahms for an enormous loop, and it took him years to get back, get his act together again. And so he was trying to write
this eagle piece.
New Paths, but he kept calling him the Young Eagle. And so Brahms was trying to write this piece. It wouldn't get together. A lot of things wouldn't get together. The ballads are one of the relatively few pieces he produced in the 6 years after this. But later, he came back to it 20 years later, and it became a C minor piano quartet. And he wrote it to his publisher about this. Actually, he wrote three or four people the same thing. And I think that meant that he wanted people to know this. He wanted history to know this. He said, it seems to be a joke, as often with Brahms, he would seem to be joking when he was most serious. He said, well, about this piece, he wrote his publisher, why don't you, if you want to know what it's about, have a picture on the cover of a man with a gun pointed to his head. Mm-hmm. And he said, if you want to, why don't you use a picture of me for the purpose, and I'll put on a yellow waistcoat and some high boots. And everybody at that time knew what that meant. He was referring to Goethe's Young Werther, the famous romantic hero who killed himself over love of the betrothed of his best friend. Werther was the classic romantic suicide, and Brahms put himself in that position when he was writing this music. Now, there's even more to it than that, though. The beginning of this piece uses a melodic theme that Robert used. It was called the Clara theme, which is made out of the letters of Clara's name. Brahms' C minor piano quartet literally starts with Clara's name in notes. And it was not the last time, as we'll see, that Brahms did that.
Can we hear it?
If you do the very beginning, you'll hear da dum ba da 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 da. That's the Clara theme.
Uh-huh.
It's that descending line, yeah, which Schumann himself used quite a bit. And
let's listen again.
Da dum ba.
We're talking about romantic love and music at the pinnacle of 19th century music on this Valentine's Day with Jan Swafford, Brahms' biographer, and Veronica Yoakum, who knows and plays all the piano literature of Robert and Clara Schumann and Johannes Brahms. The phone is 1-800-423-8255, or you can join us online at theconnection.org. Leanne is on the line.
Hi, I'm Leanne Curtis. I'm a music historian at Brandeis University and Women's Studies Scholar. It's just so wonderful to be hearing about Clara Schumann, and I'm just thinking about how far we've come, because when I was in music school, you know, 25 years ago, she was only known through her connections to these men, and we didn't recognize her as a composer. And now through the work of Veronica Yoakum and Nancy Reich's wonderful, wonderful biography of Clara Schumann, you can really appreciate her more in her own right. That she wrote so much music, and I have Veronica's recording of the piano concerto, and there's also another piano concerto, a single movement one, I think.
Yes, which I have not yet played.
And then there's a lot of vocal music, songs and choral music and chamber music, but just to be able to recognize her as a composer and not just Brahms's muse or Robert's muse.
Yeah, and of course there is a lot of wonderful piano music, which was so much liked at her youthful time, that Chopin, for instance, when he visited her in Leipzig, walked out with a copy under his arm, because he was so impressed with her ways of writing mazurkas and polonaises in her 16th year of life. And it was very, very inventive, beautiful music. I have recorded it all. I'm on the way of recording it all, but there are 3 records out, so you will be delighted when you hear this.
That's great. That's wonderful. I have something that Nancy Wright's book about Clara Schumann's attitude, this whole question about whether or not she wrote all that she could have written and why she stopped. This is what she wrote in her diary in 1839. I once believed that I possessed creative talent, but I have given up this idea. A woman must not desire to compose. There has never yet been one able to do it. Should I expect to be the one? To believe that would be arrogant. And this whole attitude, the insecurity, I think a lot of it is the anxiety that women had in stepping out of their role and becoming creators in their own rights.
I would like to answer to that, because I'm absolutely of your opinion. And there is a quote around that time, which I'm sure Clara knew, by Hans von Bülow, who was a great and wonderful and knowledgeable and intelligent musician. However, that guy dared to say that women don't possess creative genius. They can only interpret, they can only recreate, but they have no creative power on their own. And I think if Clara heard that, who had been educated by her father, by some of the greatest composers, to be as strong as a composer than she was as a pianist, I mean, that from one of the leading musicians, that would discourage anybody. And the same thing happened to Fanny Mendelssohn, who wrote even more stuff than Clara did, but had to publish it partly under the name of her brother.
Mind you that.
I mean, that's tragic.
Yes, and Fanny Mendelssohn that she worked with in the home and was so just didn't have the touring life and the life in the world that Clara did. But it's wonderful that all this is becoming known more, and just that we can get these recordings of the music and read Clara Schumann's biography. It's wonderful. Thank you so much.
Leanne, thank you. 1-800-423-8255 makes the musical Valentine's Day connection with Jan Swafford and Veronica Yoakum. Jan Swafford, did you want to make a point?
Well, we should bring up the story that finally Robert, after 2 years in the asylum, died, and Brahms and Clara were free to marry. I'm of the opinion that Robert tacitly encouraged that Robert knew he was sinking and rather expected Brahms to marry Clara. I think Clara's daughter said that Clara expected Brahms to marry Clara. It was rumored that this was going to happen. The whole musical world at this point was sort of keeping up with all this. And they went on a vacation to Switzerland with chaperones, as usual. The one thing that, everybody asks me is, did they really do it? And my opinion is that we don't know, and we're never going to know. And anybody who tells you they do know is pulling your leg, because we don't know if they were really and truly lovers or not, which is amazing if they weren't. So that Robert died, they went on vacation, they talked it through, and Brahms fled as fast as he could back to Hamburg. So that would seem to be it. He jilted her. That's what her daughter Eugenie said, and the daughter said that Clara never got over it, was crushed and devastated. You see only echoes of this in the surviving parts of her journal. And yet, this is the amazing thing. Their connection was eternal. It never stopped. She never flagged in promoting his music and playing it. She still was his muse.
She reviewed his manuscripts, and they corresponded endlessly.
He sent them to her for critiques. And this was a guy who was, on the face of it, a tremendously misogynistic person, and yet women were tremendously important to him as critics and colleagues and everything else. And their connection was eternal, even though it was a tooth and claw relationship. They both had huge egos. I can't think of Clara as a victim of any kind. She was one of the strongest people in the world. And I really believe that Brahms had some sense, consciously or otherwise, that if he married Clara, he would risk his artistic independence. Because what Clara did is, with the best of intentions, she would make up your mind what you needed to do for your own good, and by golly, you did it sooner or later. Robert did it. That Clara was an enormously powerful person.
Hmm. We're going to, of course, Brahms kept composing all his life, but we're going to hear some more of Clara going into the break. This is, I think it's your performance, Veronica Yoakum.
Yeah, it is.
a notturno piece from a larger set. Do you want to introduce it?
Oh, this is, I think, perhaps the most beautiful piece which Clara has ever written. It's a dreamy, wonderful piece which must have impressed Robert so much that he uses it in his eighth novelette, where he calls it The Voice from the Distance. Hmm. And maybe we should just listen a little bit, because it's so beautiful. And it was a distance indeed, because at that time they were absolutely outspokenly in love, but the father had, who was against that marriage, for not even the worst reasons, I think. He had separated them by taking Clara on a huge concert tour, and so Robert wrote what he called the novelletten. There was another famous Clara Novello, and he gave the novelletten the name. Claretten didn't sound good. Viketten, that was her name, didn't sound good. So he called these eight pieces novelletten. And in the greatest and biggest of this, he uses the theme in three different disguises in a kind
of... That's the use he made of it, but this, and we'll play it going into the break, is Clara's own notturno. We'll be back. This is The Connection from NPR.
From Boston University, this is WBUR, Boston's NPR news station. Coming up on Here and Now at noon, another Valentine's Day treat. Dr. Alan Altman will...
at Allaire.com.
This is the Schumann-Brahms Valentine's Day connection. This is the opening of Brahms's Variations on a Theme by Robert Schumann, performed by our guest, Veronica Yocum. This was an early piece, again in the spell of his relationship with Robert Schumann, too. What was going on, Veronica?
Well, what was going on, I think, like in the Balladen, this piece also reflects Brahms' worry, Brahms' sorrow, Brahms' compassion with both his friends, Clara and Robert. Robert was already in the hospital, and Clara had shown Brahms the variations she had written on the same theme for Robert's birthday. That was the last birthday he celebrated with the family. And she had given him that and had written to it, this is a small composition, a small present, a weak re-effort from your old Clara, and wrote wonderful variations, which Robert loved. And then she showed them to Brahms when Schumann was in the hospital. Brahms immediately picked up and wrote his own variations on the same theme and published them together with Clara's. And the amazing thing is that both Brahms and Clara used in the course of their variation on the theme by Robert a quote of the thing you heard very at the beginning at this of this program, the theme which Robert loved by the little Clara, and the same theme which he wrote the Pompeius on. And they did that both, I think, as a maybe gesture of love or tenderness to the sick Robert, to quote the piece of the little Clara.
James Warford, what describe the friendship between Robert and Johannes?
Well, it was Robert, I guess you could say, was looking for messiahs. He had been looking for them all his life, and he was well known for fixing on kind of beautiful young composers that he was convinced were going to change music. Brahms was not the first; he was the last, and he was the only one who really panned out. Some have suggested that maybe Robert was gay or bisexual. I don't see any evidence that he was actively that way, but there's no question that the sheer beauty of the young Brahms was part of the attraction, and it stayed that way.
We're talking about, certainly in the 19th century, the greatest, the most famous love triangle of Clara and Robert Schumann and Johannes Brahms. 1-800-423-TALK is our phone. Jan Swafford, Brahms' biographer, and the pianist Veronica Yochum are our guests. Joseph is on the line.
Yes. Last week, I heard with Virginia Eskin and another talented cellist whose name escaped me, the Brahms cello sonata in E minor, and it strikes me as if Brahms is lamenting Clara. And I think that probably the second movement you can detect Clara's music.
Well, I have never thought of
that. Might be Trivial Pursuit, or maybe I'm into something.
You know, the wonderful thing is that with this kind of music and with this kind of expressivity of life gestures into the music, one can be up to quite a lot of things. And, you know, the language, the musical language with which these people express themselves, of course, can reflect all kind of past and present feelings. I don't think I've ever made that connection.
And when they were together, one of the main things they did, instead of sitting around talking, though they did that too, was to play music. They would sit and play four hands and play for one another, and that again was their communication. One thing to realize, by the way, is we've been talking about Brahms, the sort of beautiful young romantic when he first met Robert and Clara. He changed. He became a very different person. Clara, after the whole debacle with Clara and after fleeing Clara, he became the sort of gruff, misogynistic, sardonic, very funny, but often in a wounding way, Brahms, that Clara never felt quite. She was always a little waiting for him to blow up. Emotional weather reports always were coming from Brahms's friend.
Tough man to take to a party.
He was very thorny, and he knew that. He knew himself very well. And Clara said after a certain point, she said, you know, I've known Johannes for 25 years and I don't know him a bit better than the day I met him. And they knew, and she knew him better than anybody.
1-800-423-8255 makes the Brahms Schumann connection. Jan is on the line.
Yes, thank you for taking my call.
Thanks, Jan.
I'm interested in the Frauen Lieb und Leben song cycle, which I had the privilege of studying now over 35 years ago in undergraduate school when I was preparing to be a teacher.
Yes.
And my voice teacher, who toured Europe at that time, before that time, knew Lieder very well, studied with Lotte Lehmann. Anyway, he was impressed with the sensitivity, and I was too, of the Robert Schumann, to the woman and her role in German society and her feelings. And that was one of the most wonderful musical experiences I ever had, was to sing that song cycle. And I do have one question, and
please.
That is, Robert Schumann was, I had read years ago, heard A440, the pitch A440,
yeah.
And I was wondering if that had a significant role in his mental breakdown. And I want to mention that I have read in medical journals that they have found people who hear pitches in their head. They put the microphone up, and they have verified that there were actual vibrations in the head upon hearing various pitches and tones. And I was wondering if you could respond to any of this, please.
Two questions there, one about the pitch in his head and the other about Schumann's sort of emotional ear for female psychology. Veronica, you're our judge.
I'm just wondering whether the pitch in the head and his receptivity to female psychology can be in any way brought together. I think, of course, Schumann's sensitivity, and as Jan Swafford referred to, sensitivity was towards beauty in personalities, not necessarily even, it could have been love to males, love to females, but I think the sensitivity was such that it had to do with the soul and with the creativity and with the beauty. So I don't quite get together what that has to do with the pitches.
I suspect the pitches were his illness. Schumann may have had syphilis and terminal illness.
That's
and the
exactly.
Composer Smetana had the same syndrome of hearing a high-pitched noise all the time. It could have been just illness, whatever it was. We don't know 100% what it was that got Schumann. He was mentally unstable from his teens, and that wasn't syphilis, but it's as likely as anything, at least, that he died of syphilis. Terminal, you know, third stage madness, you know, falling apart syphilis.
Yeah, and the amazing thing is that at that time, syphilis could be subdued for considerable
yes.
lengths of time, because he didn't pass it on to his wife. He didn't pass it on to his children.
Most people, in fact, fight it
again.
Off. I think three out of four people fight it off. And I suspect the human race wouldn't have survived the 19th century if
exactly.
that weren't true.
Exactly.
I want to get to the end of the story. As you said, Brahms fled the notion, the obvious notion to everybody of marriage to Clara. They remained great friends. She remained an important performer. He did everything that a composer could do in long form, short form, orchestral, choral, and chamber work. And then the century expires, and they begin to, too. There are a lot of letters in your marvelous biography, Jan, of testifying to Brahms' concern about Clara, who declined earlier and most deeply than he did, and then she had a stroke, and then the question became dealing with it. This is
yeah.
the very end of his composing career. Tell us about it.
For example, he wrote her later in life. He said, "I love you more than anyone on earth, and more than myself." And for Brahms to say that, he was a very hard-bitten man. He was tough as nails. But Clara was dying. Clara was sinking, and he wrote the four serious songs and the one that is most telling, I think, and this is so amazing from Brahms at that point. "Though I speak with the tongues of men and of angels and have not love, so I would be sounding brass or a tinkling cymbal." And I think with that is Brahms is saying, without love, music itself is empty. "And though I could prophesy and understand all mysteries and all knowledge," that's his last one. Before that, this song, "O Death, How Bitter Art Thou."
Let's give St. Paul and
yeah.
the Letter to the Corinthians credit there, too. Also interesting because Brahms was such an ambiguous Christian.
Right.
But go ahead.
In this letter, when the text comes in, "O Death, how well you comfort the needy one who is feeble and old. O Death, how well you comfort." That's when you hear in the accompaniment the Clara theme that Brahms puts in. And so this hard-bitten man who never could connect with a woman in our sense, at the end of his life, what he had to say was the greatest thing is love. And even music itself gains its meaning from love. Clara was love to him.
Veronica.
I agree with that. And I also agree that Brahms' feeling of religion which is the amazing thing. You know, he didn't mention the name of Christ and in the Requiem, and he claims that he was a pagan, that he didn't believe in anything. But what comes out about in the tenderness of his love, in the tenderness of the feelings after Clara had left him, had left the world about a year before his own death, is also that he turns to prayer. He turns to scriptures. His serious songs reflect that. And also he wrote the last, very last things he wrote in his life are 11 choral preludes. And the very last composition he wrote is on an old hymn from 16th century, "O world, I must leave you, but I'm giving my soul and my body into God's merciful hands." Mm-hmm. And so that was the end which Brahms kind of came to in his non-religious, religious, I think this is prayerful feelings, kind of guided through the love of Clara.
Mm. Well, we can't say it better than he does. This is the third of the four last songs, beginning "O Tod" or "O Death." Let's let Brahms tell it, but with enormous thanks to Veronica Yochum and Jan Swafford. Thanks also to Nancy Rice, the author of "Clara Schumann, the Artist and the Woman," who joined us earlier in the hour. Connection listeners, you can continue the Love Triangle conversation on our website at theconnection.org. Thanks for help today from Tim Monroe, Darren Manoogian, and Kim Bichari. The Connection is produced by Catherine Bidwell, Sarah Field, Dan First, Hitesh Hatti, Amy McDonald, Jake Shapiro, Keith Shields, and Will Smith. Mary McGrath is our senior producer. I'm Christopher Lydon. This is The Connection.
Funding for The Connection is made possible by the listeners of WBUR Boston, where The Connection is produced, and by the Allaire Corporation.